Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right. So the hottest free agent on the market, Will Ospreay.
Not anymore.
With AEW, exactly. Not anymore. With us, 1,000%. And kicking it off with one of the best matches I've seen in a while, but that seems to be par for the course for you. Here, every single fucking match you have seems to be a match of the year.
Try my best.
I mean, how did you feel coming in? Obviously, it's your first time. I mean, you've worked with us before.
Oh, no, of course. Your first official time.
Yeah,
but I feel like the pressure was on this time.
Right.
Like, do you know what I mean? When everyone's talking it up and talking about that free agency and then coming over here, it's just kind of like, all right, well, now you're here, what you got? And I was nervous, man. Like, I can't tell you enough. Like, I was getting the jitters, but, like, I felt like I did the best that I physically could do out there. And, like, I loved every single minute of it, barring the brain buster on that. My ass hurts so much.
Oh, my
much.
God, dude.
It's the size of a basketball, man.
Oh, my God. Like, so let me just ask that. It was such an incredible move. How are you supposed to ever bump on that?
I thought you were just meant to land like shoulders on the turnbuckle. Like,
okay.
I feel like it's kind of like the Generico brainbuster. But
yeah,
I guess, I don't know if it was just like, it was a little bit too far out. I felt like I committed to it, but like, but it is what it is. And hey, I'd do it again in a heartbeat. Like, I would not like.
Yeah, I think when we had I worked with Takeshita about a month ago in Phoenix, and I think we attempted that too, and mine ended up being really strange of a bump as well. Not as crazy as yours, but still, it's a interesting move. But like you said, it's the Generico brainbuster.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think if you took it a few times, you might understand it better, because I did the same. I didn't really quite know exactly where I was supposed to bump with it.
So. Yeah, I think that's the direction. But like, is what it is. Like, yeah. I don't blame it. It happens. Like, always happens all the time. Like,
it just adds to the intensity of the match too.
Yeah. Oh, mate, but I was crying. Like, Jeremy was like, "Dude, we might need to stop this. My ass hurts so much."
Like I said, you worked with us quite a few times. Obviously, you and I worked in Wembley. We'll talk about that. But what was kind of the impetus for you to make your decision to come to AEW?
Main thing was this, because I wanted to be in the UK. Like, I'm not going to be exactly comfortable moving to another country. I moved to Japan back in 2019, and as much as I loved it, it just wasn't home. And I entered a new relationship with my new Mrs. Al, wrestles under the name Alex Windsor, and we have a stepson now, or she has a son, I have a stepson now. She just started school, and like, if you know her story and anything that she's been through, the UK scene kind of know it, but like, she lost her husband, and like, having to like, pick herself up from that, and like having to be a mum, a single mum, to like losing her husband, it's going to have some tolls on you. So you need to be around her family, need to be around her friends and her social circle. So I couldn't bear the thought of moving her away from all of that and having her on her own again. So for me, the main priority was to stay in the UK, but to also, I wanted to up the wrestling now, because I'd done everything in New Japan. Like, I completed it. So the viable option was, where was I happy and what was I doing? And every time I came here, Tony has given me nothing but trust and respect the moment I came in here. It was the right decision for me, like, at this time. So, like, I'm happy here. I'm looking forward to, like, the challenges, and just, it's the right decision.
So you'll stay in the UK and just fly back and forth?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, for example, if they're going to do, like, a pay-per-view, like, there's no point in me going home. So I'll, like, Dynamite Wednesday, I'll stay. Maybe there's a Collision on a Saturday, I'll stay for that. Then pay-per-view Sunday, then I'll stay for the next Dynamite, and then I'll go home there. Like, I have no problem staying in hotels. That's what I did when I was over in Japan. And
right.
Worst case scenario, I can go over to Kyle and Skies. Like, they owe me. They lived in my house back in 2021, so I'll just stay with them, mate.
Did you have any talks at all with WWE?
Yeah, of course. Like, but like, it was night and day. Like, even in like differences in like what they were offering and what AEW was offering. AEW was way better, and like the scheduling, like everything about AEW was completely the right option for me. And it was almost just kind of like, you can go be a superstar in WWE and famous, but it's not as good a pay, and like it's not as kind of a schedule. So like, I just, well, like, I respect everyone there doing it, but I just, it's just not for me.
Let's talk about your time in New Japan. Once again, it built yourself up to being one of the greats, gaijin wise, that ever worked in New Japan. How long did you work there? When did you start?
So I started in 2016. I was 22 years old.
Wow. Was that one of your first big tours?
Yeah, mate, so I came in for a one shot, first of all, and then signed a contract during that one shot to then come back. And then it was kind of funny because the first tour that I'd done, there was an earthquake, like a real bad one. So they had to cut the tour halfway through, and I'd done the back end of it. And then the tour after that was the best Super Juniors. And then walking into Japan and like barely knowing English, bruv, like going to Japan, not knowing a single bit of the language, it's daunting and it's scary. But I found my footing in there very soon, and like up and down, made a bunch of mistakes over there, but just like, what a place to just grow up in, and just to learn about who I am as a man, and like learning etiquette and manners, and like how to be part of a team. And it was just, I couldn't ask for a better introduction into like the pro wrestling business. Like, they were so nice to me, man.
It's such an honor to be accepted by a company in Japan. I mean, and once again, it's one of the reasons why guys like you and guys like from my generation, you know, Eddie and Benoit and Dean and Mysterio, like learning not just wrestling lessons in Japan, but life lessons as well. It really is, like you mentioned, a very cool experience in the ring and out of the ring, and being a part of that team with the uniforms and everything.
I think so many people could actually benefit from doing it.
Yeah,
though, man.
Like, absolutely.
Like, it would be so good if like certain guys from AEW weren't like on a week to week to just go over and just learn how to be part of a team, learn how to be part of just a movie. Like whatever the booker says goes. Like, just being a part of that. Like, I loved it, man. Like, I can't sit here and floor it. Are there certain things that I didn't like about it? Yeah, but like all in all together, like I couldn't ask for like being accepted by the fan base, being accepted by the roster. Like, they literally took me as a young man, like that didn't know anything, and then developed me into a man. Like, I have a mortgage now. I look after everybody. It's everything I wanted and more out of my time there.
When did you start wrestling? How old were you?
Professionally, all right. Professionally, at 18, like when I walked into London School of Lucha Libre, my trainers were Greg Burridge and Gary Vanderholm, who owned Lucha Britannia. So their whole thing is less wrestling, more cabaret show. But like, you'd put on a mask and learn how to be like a Lucha Libre guy. And like, I loved my time there. But
what was your name under the mask?
Dark Britannico. So there was a guy called Leon Britannico. So I was the Venom to his Spider-Man.
Gotcha.
I was the evil twin who was. My partner Paul Robinson in the Swords of Essex with a UK indie tag team. He's like, that guy looked after me so much. Like even learning how to like deal with like dodgy promoters when they like screw you over, and just like, he's 5'5" and he's just like one of the scariest dudes I know, but big old heart. Like, he's not to be messed with, eh? But I love my time in Lucha Britannia. It was just like good environment to grow up in. Like, their warm-up routines, they would turn all the lights off and then put disco lights on and then play out rave music, so you just dance around, get all warmed up. So it was all that. It was almost like trying to instruct you to be an idiot and be goofy, because like, this is what the wrestling business is kind of is.
Right.
It's like, shy kids don't get sweets was their like catchphrase that they had. So you had to get out of your comfort zone. And like, I always enjoyed Greg and Gary's training because it was so unorthodox to what everyone else used to train. Everyone would just make you do like 1,000 squats,
sure,
and be like, no, go hit the ropes. And that's not for everyone. Like, if you want people to come back in wrestling, you got to make them enjoy it. So
right.
And like, I'd think the way that they looked at wrestling, the way they saw wrestling, it was fun, but it was also strict.
Because you think about, you know, training in England, it's always, you hear about the snake pit and Wigan and that sort of thing. But you're right, the most important thing of wrestling is the character and the showbiz and the pomp and circumstance. So to train with that, that's a great way to start learning.
Yeah, I just think like, the amount of times everybody wants to be the big John Cena's or the Hulk's or whoever, right? They just want to be the star, but like sometimes it's not the role for you. Like, and they would just be like, hey, we want you to go play a silver lizard. How do I be a silver lizard? I don't know, you figure it out. Like,
right.
So that's what I loved about it. And like the way that they mixed it in with like, it's not really a wrestling show, it's a cabaret show. So you would have like these dancers come in with flamethrowers. I saw like girls putting needles through their arms and stuff like that. It was a showcase more than wrestling. And then I guess from there it was kind of, all right, well, who's the guy underneath the mask? And that's kind of where I needed to figure it out. And Burridge always says you got about 6 seconds when you walk out the curtain to like get this crowd in to be invested in you, because if they are, they're just on their phones otherwise, because we've all got phones these days. My idea was I wanted to be like Assassin's Creed, which there was a video game, and I loved the character Ezio, loved how he moved, so I bought the jacket, and then instantly coming out to that, people was like, ah, we get it, like, we understand. Even though it was just like a jacket from eBay, like, at least people understood what I was trying to, to do.
So some kind of character behind
it. Yeah, there's your 6 seconds, like, you are the aerial assassin, there we go, like, that's how I came up with it. Growing up through that, and then growing up in the British wrestling boom, it just got, like, crazy all of a sudden. Like, we were getting all these like top high-end indie level and Japan wrestlers. Like, we had Devitt, we had all the New Japan guys coming over, we had Ricochet coming over when he was the hottest. Like, I keep saying it, like, the 2013 Ricochet run was incredible. Like, I guy couldn't be touched. You had Adam Cole come over, you had AJ Styles coming over. Like, the British wrestling boom from 2014 to 2019, like, we were like on top of like the wrestling world at one point. Like, even in the American indies, like, none of them were, unless if you were PWG, not many of those lads were like doing the things that the UK guys were bringing to the table. And I guess that's why WWE came in and like raided all the guys.
Right. Going back to what you were saying about you, did you do gymnastics or anything? Because you're so aerial.
So kind of like I had a trampoline in my back garden. I honestly would just watch WCW, the cruiserweight division, and I would see like Billy Kidman do his shooting star press, and I was like, I could do better than that. So I would bang my trampoline up to my swimming pool ledge and just try like doing it. Yeah, dude, my mum and dad, like, they worked hard, so I would just like try and like emulate like that. And like, as like WWE purchased WCW and ECW, I kind of fell off of wrestling. Like, I still enjoyed it, but I didn't keep up with it all the time. And that's kind of where I started finding, like, I started getting myself into trouble. Like, I was just a bit of a nightmare as a kid. And then my mum, for my 14th birthday, my mum is into theatre production, so she does, like, amateur drama groups, but she knows a bunch of fabricators and welders. So built me a wrestling ring on my birthday, for my birthday when I was 14. So like,
present.
Yeah, dude. And jeez, that's like, that's why, like, I've been in a ring like since I was 14 years old, just like learning how to run the ropes, like learning how to, like, and a good wrestling ring as well, like a big old monster truck spring in the middle. It was like bouncing off that thing. It was probably a better bum than most rings that are in the UK
now.
How
did she get the blueprint to get that made?
I guess like they just worked it out. They just were like, well, how would a wrestling ring look? And I guess if you go on Google and maybe if you dig probably deep enough, now, like, you'd find it, right? It was one of those like DIY wrestling rings. Like it wasn't like the bars that separate. It would almost be like a giant square that like six guys had to fucking like lift up, and then you bolt it in. So it wouldn't connect. It would bolt together instead. But it still was just like kind of like I knew like this is what I wanted to do. And I guess in a weird way, my mum saw it as, well, at least he's not on the streets. Right. At least he's not like staying getting into trouble. Right. Yeah.
So when you were working kind of the British wrestling boom, who were you working with a lot?
I was working with Zack Sabre Jr. I was working with Marty Scurll. I was working with Pete Dunne. Mark Andrews was another one. I put a lot of my like success down because of Mark, because he was so giving in terms of when I first came in. And we were backyard wrestling boys. Like, we had like kind of connection where we would upload our backyard wrestling videos onto this forum, and we kind of like knew each other through there. Same as like Flashmore Webster, Ryan Smile was another one. There was like a bunch of, Jimmy Havoc was another one as well. And like, a lot of these guys have like gone, and for like obvious reasons, but like, this is kind of what like I grew up around, and this is like a good introduction of how like the business works, because they taught me the fundamentals of like what storytelling is. Because a lot of people are saying this is how you should wrestle, and although I understood it, I still wanted to do my own way of wrestling. So like, I found myself in a lot of trouble, because obviously people would say like, he's got a big head, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And like, I understood it, but it's just kind of like, this is how I found my enjoyment in wrestling.
which is what you have to. You have to have a lot of confidence in yourself when you start, because people will kind of, you know, he's not playing along with what the veterans say, and yeah, that's fine. But you have to have confidence if you want to get to the next level in this biz.
And I think there's a mixture of confidence, but there's a mixture of this, like, I accepted the fact that I was never going to get signed anywhere because, like, I was in England, and that was what we were instructed constantly. It was just kind of like, oh, if you want to be a big deal, you've got to go over there. You've got to go to America.
Mm.
And I had no ambition of, like, wanting to leave. Like, the maximum that I wanted was to go to Japan. I've always wanted to go to Japan. That was just the ambition and the dream. I just accepted, like, I'm going to be a mastic man from Monday to Friday, and then from Friday to Sunday, I'm going to be a pro wrestler.
Mm.
So, like, I accepted that. So I wasn't going to let people shit on my fun. I know everyone was doing it to be like, hey, like, this is how it works over here. And I understood that. But I'm just going to do things how I want to do them. And if people generally want to come on the ride with me, then so be it. But, mm-hmm, like, and a lot of it is, like, it is immaturity. Because, like, obviously, if I told someone this, and I would think, like, well, fuck that guy then. Like, but in the same sense of, like, I just want to have fun doing this, and I feel like it kind of shows my work now. I just have fun doing this type of stuff. Like, if it's not fun, then I don't enjoy it.
How did you end up getting booked in Japan in the first place?
RevPro have, like, a partnership with New Japan where they would bring over... The first guy they brought over was Liger, believe it or not, and it was a crazy thing. Like, me and my partner, Robbo, were, like, practicing a little tag match. We saw this Japanese boy on the stage just sitting there, just literally politely sitting on the stage. We're just thinking, like, oh, he's got a New Japan tracksuit. Oh, he must be somewhere. And we'd continue our spot, and Paul went, mate, look behind you. Look, that same guy had the Liger mask on. So he's like, whoa!
He doesn't look like you think he's going to look.
No, not at all. Yeah, like, yeah. He's tanned. He's, yeah, like, yeah, really, yeah, jacked,
super
as well.
Super tanned, yeah.
Like, but super nice, eh? So, like, going up and saying hello to him was, like, a delight. But then RevPro would bring over, like, AJ and Okada and Tanahashi and all of the legends. And I was lucky enough, like, on one of the tours, I had a weekend of me versus Marty versus AJ, and then on the next day I wrestled Okada with Tanahashi watching through the curtain, Gato ringside, Tiger Hattori in the stand. So it was almost just like a perfect combination.
Yeah.
And at this point as well, so like they said after that match in October of 2015, they said, we're going to bring you in for the Super Juniors. And that was it.
Mm.
And then during that time, AJ left. Bullet Club, Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson left, and Nakamura left. And on the way out, they were kind of like, oh, who do we bring in? And AJ put in a word for me to, why don't you bring in that little UK wrestler, Will? And then they said it was going to be two shows at first. And then when I showed up to the show, they were kind of basically like, what do you want to do? I went, I just want to wrestle here, if that's all right with you guys. And they gave me a contract right then and there. I just thought, how lucky, man. Like, I didn't... I'd say this all the time to people. It's funny to me because I'd done that big Ryogoku show in front of 10,000 people on the Sunday. I flew on Monday, and then Tuesday I went back to work. Like, I was working on, like, the scaffoldings, and then finding it, because I didn't know how it operates, like the tour by tour.
Right,
so
right.
So it was just kind of like, oh, I just guess I'll wait till Japan calls me back. And they're like, no, you're going to be needed next week. Like, so I had to say to my uncle, like, oh, I can't do this anymore. And he went, right. When that wrestling packs up, we'll still be here.
He's still waiting for you.
Yeah, I'm still there. Every now and again, he's just like, I know you've done Wembley, but, you know, I've got some windows need doing, son.
That's one of the cool things about the kind of that lineage there around that time, because at first it was Ferg, Prince Devitt.
Yep.
What's his name? Finn Balor.
Yep.
And then he left, and AJ kind of took the spot.
Yep.
Then AJ left, and Kenny took the spot. Then Kenny left, and then
me and Jay kind of took
that spot. Jay and you kind of took that spot, and then you took it completely.
Yeah, I guess I just run with it. But, yeah, like, I'm very curious who they're going with now. I guess they're going to go with Zach now, like, over in New Japan.
Yeah.
I think that's the right decision. Yeah, the guy's nearly fluent in Japanese as well. That's, mm-hmm, like, the best thing about it. I mean, they've got...
Finley's getting a push there.
Yeah, Finley's getting a push, and, like, deservedly so. He's worked, like, extremely hard. Even the War Dogs, that match that we done with, we kind of... flipping Cage of Death, like, before we left, like, they've all got guys, like, ready to go, and, like, Suji's there, Shota's there, they've all got guys ready to go, so I'm hoping, like, it, like, people don't give up on the product. I still want people to be invested in New Japan and still enjoy the shows, and I believe, like, guys like Jack Perry are going over there, so, like, AEW are still supporting them, which is, like, that's all you want in a relationship, eh? You just want to be able to, like, know that even though these guys are coming over here, not only can we come back and, like, do, like, pot shows for New Japan, but, like, we'll give you some of our guys just to make sure that the relationship's all good.
When you did Super Juniors, who was in that tournament with you?
Mate, that was the Ricochet match that blew up.
Oh,
so that was my first one. So
that's the one that first put you on the map, kind of, right?
Yeah, so that was me and Rico in 2016. My first ever Kurikan Hall main event as well. So that's why I think it got a lot of, like, no, I think the match in itself, I just, people think, like, you know, what is this? Like, people are doing, like, these crazy Spider-Man routines. And just, like, I think there was that. There was Matt Sydal on there, Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly, Beretta, Rocky Romero. Mate, there was, it was a Volador Jr., Taguchi, Kushida. I think I've already said him.
What year was that?
2016. Mate, there was an elite list of junior heavyweights in that group. Like, it was...
I remember one time we were over there, WWE was over there.
We tried to hang out because we tried to get a podcast with me, you, and Ricochet together.
That's right.
But we were in Osaka and you guys were in Tokyo.
That's
There's no way we could come over.
That's right. Good memory. Wow. Yeah. Well, that is an elite group right there for sure. What a great way to make a first impression for
you. Yeah, but like, you have all of those guys, like, straight, but like, soon after, like, Kyle, Bobby, a few of them had all gone to NXT. So then, and same with Ricochet, like, all of them were, like, going. So then it was just kind of like, I was here for, like, a long, in the long term, like, I think I signed, like, a 3-year deal at that point. So, like, as they left, like, I started to rise in, like, the junior heavyweight spot. Mm-hmm. And, like, Gato started trusting me in these positions to be the junior heavyweight guy. And, like, I just couldn't think of, like, a better group of guys to have been around to actually, like, learn the trade of pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the art of it. Because, like, once again, like, a lot of these guys I knew on the indies and in PWG, and it was great being alongside those guys. But, like, I learned when I got in the ring with guys like Shibata and Kushida and Okada, even the ones where, like, I Hiromu, and then I feel like I finally found my footing in 2019 when Kenny left and the Bucks left and Cody left, obviously set up AEW.
Yeah.
And then obviously I and myself, Jay, stepped in. I found my footing when I wrestled Shingo in the Super Juniors. I just understood it. It was just kind of almost like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, wow, I get it now. I understand wrestling.
What finally clicked in your head?
It was a mixture of just, like, watching Kenny's matches all the time, like, watching, like, how he paced his matches, watching how Okada paced his matches, but then getting in a ring with Shingo, who's, like, I watched Shingo when I was a kid, man. Like, I was watching him in Dragon Gate with Dragon Kid and all those guys, and I was always a fan, dude. And then getting in the ring and already being like, I know all your moves, sir. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm a nerd, dude. I know all your moves. So then finally being in there, and it was a real weird time because, like, in 2018, I bought my house and in England on a mortgage. And then it came around about, like, 2019, like, early 2019, I thought to myself, like, I'm really starting to understand this side of Japan. To fully immerse myself in it, I want to move there.
Mm.
So I lived in Japan for 2 years. But then as I moved there, I had this, like, final in the Best of Super Juniors with Shingo. And it completely, like, I don't think, like... It's up there with, like, my finest work. It's my favorite match.
Really?
One of my favorite matches ever. Like, in terms of, like, that junior heavyweight style, like, 100%. It's, like, one of my favorite ones I've ever done. And I understood it. And then to get into announce to the Japanese audience in Japan that I was moving there, I truly felt accepted. And, like, you couldn't, like, capture almost that lightning in a bottle of, like, okay, this is our boy. Mm. Like, I wanted to be, like, the adopted son. And, like,
sure.
I know I'm not, like, I wasn't nowhere near fluent in Japanese. Like, I struggle with it now. But just, like, learning it and embracing the culture and really stepping outside of my comfort zone and just diving into, like, this open water of what Japan wrestling could actually be and living in the culture. And it was a struggle at first, like, understanding, like, how getting in your furniture in and living there. And, like, there's so many things that are confusing. Like, I couldn't send money to an English bank because I needed a stamp. And you're like, what stamp? Like, everyone thinks Japan is so technologically advanced, but they're just like, could you fax it over?
Well, yeah, you think that, and then you go to the ranch towns that literally, you know, the close at 6 o'clock at night, you're eating, you know, dinner at Lawson Station convenience store, right? Quickly, was the Ricochet match, was that the one that Vader got all mad about?
Yeah, mate, that was the one.
Was that with you that he had the match, or was with Ricochet?
So I had the match with him, but I got Ricochet to get involved, so it was
What happened with that? Tell that story quickly.
So, mate, So Vader popped off at me, and obviously I didn't think nothing of it. I was more like, thanks for the share, mate. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because
like,
he saw the matches and you guys were just flipping around.
Yeah,
and
just burying it. And like, and he didn't see the match. And like,
why did he get so mad?
I don't know, right? People just get mad. They've got no reason to get mad. Yeah. They get mad. I get it now. Yeah. Like, fucking been around it too much. But like, at the time, I guess he was the first legend that ever buried me. So I was kind of like, what? You, yeah, like, do you know what I mean? But then... like guys like yourself, and strangely enough, saying it now, Seth Rollins stuck up for me, Regal stuck up for me, so it was great. But then it just became, it came too much to basically be like I thought he actually wanted to fight me. So I was like, what is going on? And then we got in like a group conversation with myself, Andy Quilden from RevPro and Vader, and basically sorted out the match. For me, it was like a horrible experience, eh? Because he's not the nicest chap in the world, right, but like, yeah. I don't want to speak any
ill of him
because he's passed on now, yeah. Bless him, and he's someone's dad, eh? Like, yeah. All the best to the family, but he wasn't very nice to me. But like, all in all, Chris Hero loved it. Like, do you know what I mean?
So you guys actually worked a match out of it?
Dude, it was in your call. It was great. Like,
we probably just drew a house.
Yeah, man. But like, it was wonderful for what it was. It was probably my biggest one match payday. So like, it was real fun. Like, looking back on it, and it's a good story to tell the boys. But it's just like, you know, he wanted a free match clause. He wanted to do like free match. Oh, and off, like, what more of a story can we do out of this?
Right, do you know what I mean?
It's the one match you're getting your payday, you're fucking off.
Yeah. So, you moved to Japan pre pandemic, and as you mentioned, kind of ingratiating yourself into the culture. And I could never speak Japanese, it's a very difficult language to learn because different parts of the country have different Japanese, essentially. Yeah. I learned how to read katakana. Which helped.
Really?
Yeah. Which helped a lot.
Is that the translator thing that you get on your sponsorship where you go like...
This was pre that. I actually went to a library and photocopied the characters and just studied the newspapers, the magazines, Japanese magazines, the trucks on the side of the road, Hanshin trucks and reading, all that sort of thing.
That's sick.
But I mean, you get respect from the fans because they know you're trying.
Yeah.
You know, and you obviously...
That's the main thing.
Right.
You got to show that you're willing to try.
Yes. And you obviously did that by actually moving there.
Yeah.
So where did you move to?
Strangely enough, I moved in between Kinshicho and Ryogoku. So it's tattooed on my arm, man.
Oh, like, wow.
So my debut was in Sumo Arena. The junior title was in Sumo Arena. The one that I talked about was Shingo.
Yeah.
It's in Sumo Arena. And then the world title that I won was in Sumo Arena.
Oh,
so
wow.
I had this weird connection with this building. Good, yeah. So I, like, every time I was in Sumo Arena, it was fun. I'd just get my bags and go for a little walk. It was 10 minutes away. It was always great. So I lived literally in the heart of Tokyo, and I was seeing my ex at the time. She was working with Stardom, so she needed to be near her dojo.
Mm.
And I didn't mind it personally. Like, I went to the dojo. I would train with the Stardom girls like all the time, which is like real hard for her and myself when Hana Kimura passed away, because I would see her like every single week. I'd go up to her, I'd hang out with her, we'd go drinking together all the time. So that was a difficult one for when she passed. But like, the social life that I had in Japan was incredible, and just getting to know people, and just, I feel like I've really bonded a lot with those Stardom girls. Like, I mean, there's a girl over there now called Azumi, and like, I knew her when she was like 14 years old, man. And she's grown into a woman now. And I would train her every now and again. So like, I'm dead proud of her. I'm like, happy for all the work that she's doing. She's going to be a star one day. Everyone's going to know her name. In the next 5 years, the wrestling world would know her name. I promise you that.
Talk a little bit more about Hana Kimura. I've never really talked about her. I didn't know her. She's a very special person and a great talent, right?
One of the kindest people that you'll ever meet. She's so bubbly. She was so enthusiastic. And I feel like she understood that how hard it was for like certain gaijins to come over and feel comfortable. So on the Stardom shows, I would kind of be backstage, and like, I would feel awkward because it's an all-female show, eh? So I would just kind of like be away from the changing rooms and just go watch the matches. And mate, it's so funny as well. Those Stardom girls could wrestle circles around most of the people. There is some Joshi girl out there that you have no idea who her name is, and she could wrestle circles around a lot of the people that you'd think are amazing. I've got this wonderful story. I love telling it. There's a little cartoon made of it. And like, it was one of the first times I was over living in Japan backstage at a Stardom show. And I was watching this video on my show. For the life of me, I couldn't remember what it was. She was like, oh, hi, Osprey. And I was like, hey, Hannah, I'm coming. So like, she just sat down next to me and was like, what you watching? And I just sat there. And it was like this 2.5 minute video where she was just sitting next to me, just watching, having no idea what the fucking thing was saying, like no idea. And then I looked, she looked over, she went, I have no idea what that was. I went, so why are you sitting here then? You could go off. She was like, oh, because you are lonely. Oh. I was, oh my God, oh. You sweet girl. Oh. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. She's the sweetest human being, man. So like, that loss was super hard because I guess it was like, we were meant to be over in Japan. And like, I guess she like lived around the area. So like, seeing it, and like, it was all over social media, right? Like, when we were like, the incidents were happening, it's not nice to like view, but we were like frantically trying to call Rossi to make sure everything was okay, and like, just obviously going to bed thinking everything could be all right, and then waking up and seeing the news, it was
because she had tweeted some bad things,
yeah, mate. She tweeted like some like horrendous stuff, like, yeah. And we obviously saw it, and I was telling B, like, get on the phone to Rossi right now, like. And then, like, there was just so much going on at that time. It's horrible to, every time I see the mom, I give her a big cuddle and just make sure, like, I check in every now and again, just give her a little, like, I hope she's doing well. Like, I hope everybody, like, that knew her, like, really knew her, like, is doing well. Because it's so hard, like, losing someone, especially during that time. Like, Japan during the pandemic was not kind. It was not kind on any of us. Like, it was super difficult, and, like, to everyone that, like, all the gaijins that went through it, and even to all the Japanese boys that went through it, like, you had to be, like, made of stone to go through with that shit, man.
Talk about it a bit, because I remember you and I spoke at one point because you were having some real mental issues with being there and everything. Yeah,
I had a breakdown, dude. It was hard. Like, it was... You would show... So, like, we got locked out. So, like, I'd fucking treat it as if it was, like, the bird flu. So I was just kind of like, well, we're going on holiday. And then, obviously, when I got back to England, that's how you... in Syria, it was like, whoa, people are dying, like,
yeah.
Everyone remained seated, like,
right.
So it was almost like, oh, you have 3 months off. And at first I was kind of like, okay, I could do 3 months, and my body's hurting a bit, 3 months of it. And when it got to like month one, I was like, fucking hell, like, get me out of here. And then, like, obviously we came back in August, and then I didn't have it as bad as the rest of them because I had an apartment. But like, you would be locked in your room for 2 weeks, and then they would track your phone. So then you had a tracker on your phone.
Oh my God.
So if you left to go get groceries or go get anything, they'd fucking pop off at you and be like, get the fuck back in your room.
Wow.
And they weren't kind about it. But at first I was in the apartment, right? So for the first 8 months, at least I could like get away and go to the apartment. But like, you weren't allowed to use the bullet train. So like, when we would do a tour, if we go from Tokyo to Osaka, it's about 7 hours on a bus. 2.5 hours on the train. I would always elect to go on the train, right? It's so much easier for everybody. We weren't allowed to do that. Then you would do your shows where they're not allowed to cheer or make noise or anything. So like, that mentally fucks with you anyway. So then your shows would end at about 9 p.m. where the restaurants would close at 8 p.m. So you'd starve your fucking most of your roster. But then certain shows, you weren't allowed to stay in those areas. So you had to drive back to Tokyo. So like, you're fucking wide awake, barely getting any fucking sleep. And then like, we kind of got into a swing of it, and like, I tried to play it as a game, as if to be like, make the crowd make noise, like, this is like, let's treat it as a game, we got to make them laugh, we got to make them cheer, we got to make them do something. But you know, Japan, rules are rules.
Of course, rules
they don't
are rules.
Bend them, they don't break them.
That's right,
rules are rules.
That's one of my sayings I made up in the early 90s. Rules are rules. Yeah. This doesn't make any sense. Rules are rules.
Yeah,
that's all you need to know about Japan.
But like, it just wasn't kind, eh? So like, I mean, a lot of the boys, like Jay and Juice and Finley, who are staying in the hotels, and they said like, some of the hotels were like horrendous, where like, you couldn't even get Uber Eats. So they would give you these like little bento boxes. Oh, and so like, once again, all of your roster was starved. And like, one of the rooms, man, like, this trailer like we're in right now, it's lovely, right? Half the size of that. Yeah, that's your room. The window that barely opens five inches.
I hate
that. Was like, dude, it wasn't kind on any of us. But like, we did it because we love the company. We want to keep our jobs. We want to keep the business moving forward. But like, this was fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
This was stupid. This was like... It was so, and then it was mentally taxing when like, we got into 2021, and then AEW is like starting to open up again, and like, fans are kind of coming back like open arena, like, you guys done Daily Sprays, right?
Yeah.
And you had like, fans kind of there. So we're fucking banging our head against the wall where you guys are having like, people cheer. We're like fucking, and I think it almost fueled us with like, anger and rage and shit like that, man. And then this is kind of like, so how I called you from the mental breakdown was just an abundance of things, right? So like, we're having all of that. they slung the world title on me, which is, for me, man, like, that was everything that I worked for.
It's a big deal.
Man, like, they trust me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, they trust me into going into these big matches and delivering on these performances. They gave me the world title. My first defense was against Shingo. On the day, we rocked up to the venue, whole card gets changed because six of the guys got COVID. So then they give a whole big dressing room. They're like, okay, guys, like, has anyone got any, like, fever? Like, a couple of the guys. But basically, no one wanted to put their fucking hand up because guess where you're going? The fucking hotel. So then you go, like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
So then Gator pulls me into a room and it's just like, hey, like, you're the only singles match today. So instead of 30, could you do 45? Which is kind of like, obviously, I'm going to do anything Gator says. Sure. You know, like, in Gator, I fucking trust.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then minute 20 into that match, I hit a shooting star press on Shingo and my back fucking exploded.
Oh, shit.
I've never felt pain like it. I was in agony. My boy Hanare was ringside and he saw it and, like, I could put the guy on the table. I start crouching down. He's like, you good? I went, dude, I think I broke my back. Like, I was in agony. Continued with the match. Was able to finish it. I don't know how, but I was able to finish it. Done my promo and then went straight to the doctor. I think I needed to go to the hospital, dude. Mm. Like, I'm in pain. And I was met with, sorry, COVID. And, like, they wouldn't take me to the hospital. And
why?
Because it was COVID. Like, they were doing emergency shutdowns everywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's not on New Japan's fault, but it was just, I was in agony, dude. But, like,
yeah,
what could they do? Like, they were,
right.
So our hands were kind of, like, tied together at this point. But we was able to go back to Tokyo. Meanwhile, like, we knew six of the guys with the roster got COVID. So we have no idea if any of us got COVID.
Mm.
So then they transport us to a Tokyo hospital, like, but, like, not actually like a, almost like a tent where we get in, like, the COVID test. I'm like, thankfully I didn't come back with any symptom, like, nothing for me, nothing on the rest of the roster. But then it was like, hey guys, we're going to cancel the rest of the shows, but we're all still out here. So, like, we're all the gaijins are kind of like, well, do we get to go home? And they're like, oh, we might have house shows. It was like, house shows, send us home.
Right.
Meanwhile, I was in agony, dude. Like, I was in so much pain. I couldn't, like, bear the pain of it. And then it was just a case of being like, there was the injury, I was going for a messy breakup, and it was just like, there was so much going on. And then they went, hey, don't go outside, stay in your room, don't go to the gym, don't do anything. And I was in my apartment, dude, pacing up and down like a tiger. And I went, you know what, fuck this, I'm out of it. And I'd like, it broke my heart, man. It fucking did.
And the champion.
Yeah, yeah. I handed the belt back and I was just like, dude, I'm hurt, I'm injured, my head's all over the fucking place, I need to go home. And, like, Gato completely understood. Like, he's heartbroken over it, but he understood that I needed to go home. I went home, like, I sorted myself out, but, like, that's when I called you and I was just like, dude, I feel like I might lose my job because, yeah, like, it was a case of, like, they trusted me with this belt and I don't think I'm ever going to get that trust back. But it was just like, I feel like I was going to get fired. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, what do I do? Like, because the only option in England at the time was NXT UK. And, like, while I respected all the guys that did that, I was like, fuck that. I don't want to go there. Like, I want to be a New Japan wrestler, or I want to wrestle like I'm a New Japan wrestler. So, like, obviously, like, you obviously said, like, of course there would be something here, but, like, not right now. Like, we couldn't open the doors yet. But New Japan, being New Japan, thankfully, allowed me to stay at home, work out all my shit, get healthy. They even said, could you go do the American shows? And I said, yeah, it's cool. Mm. Like, I got therapy and, like, I got my MRIs back and I blew out two of my discs in my back. And, like, I got my therapy done. Like, I was good to go in August. Like, so that's how good it was. I got hurt in May. I was back in August. How good the therapy was. But, like, it was just one of those things, man, where just, like, it wasn't kind on any of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like, to the guys that did stay there, like, my heart goes out to you. But, like, that was going on for 3 years, man. So that's why, like, so many of the guys, like, every time, like, it was weird. So, like, I would see guys here complain and being just like, well, blah, 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 blah. But I was like, man, like, you guys are blessed right
now.
Yeah,
no idea.
You guys get your catering. You guys get to see each other and all that. All those New Japan guys need, like, their hats. Shingo especially. Shingo worked so hard during that pandemic. It was just one of those ones where just, like, unless you were there, you have no idea how difficult it was on everyone involved.
Well, and they kept it going for another year or so, the lockdown. Everything was open in the States and Japan was still locked down.
Mate, like, there's so many, like, stories. Like, Jamie Hayter and Juice Robinson and Tony Storm were living with me when we was, like, in 2020 anyway. And Jamie Hayter couldn't get back to Japan. They, like, cancelled her visa. So, like, I had to look after her, bless her, when she was staying at my house. It was just a nightmare, that whole... And then, like, it started going back to normal in 2022.
Yeah.
So then I was travelling back over. And then when I got there, so it was only a 6-day isolation, which is way better than 14.
Yeah.
Right. So I was like, okay, 6 days ain't bad. And on day two, they announced that Russia and Ukraine are going into war with one another.
Gosh, right.
So now they're being like, oh, like there might be, so you sat in a room, you're not allowed out. And they're being like, oh, England might be getting drafted into the war. So you're like fucking pace. And you're like, what the fuck,
man.
I'm having my mates call me up being like, dude, there might be a war, like we're getting involved in it. I was just like, this dude, like, because you have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And then you get out, and then I think in May they got rid of the isolations, but crowd noise still not happening, like, and that didn't stop until I feel like Antonio Inoki died like 2022, like October time, and they really wanted to do the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
Like if they sold it at half capacity, they wanted to do the Ichinisan. But that's the first time I heard Japanese fans again, and that was my match with Kenny in Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome. So like going through all of that, man, and then finally getting to hear him again, it was such a drag
because right before that, like I was there, Tokyo Dome 18, 19, and 20, and then 20, we had two shows at the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
Drew like 70,000 people.
Over those 2 days. It was meant to be me and you in 2021, right?
We had talked about it, yeah. It was going to be me and you or me and Suzuki, Minoru Suzuki, with you either the next year.
Yeah.
So that's what Gato and I were discussing. So yeah, and then the whole fucking thing just went down the drain, and it still hasn't quite recovered. I mean, two Tokyo Dome shows.
The business model hasn't recovered.
Yeah.
But look, because I mean, they're even structuring contracts different now. Like, I mean, there are certain guys there that aren't under contract right now and like deserve to be under a contract.
Right.
But New Japan, I don't know if it's New Japan hasn't got the finances or Bushiroad isn't giving them the finances anymore, because like it's, I guess the profit margin's fallen way down. But like when things started opening up in 2023, I just sensed opportunity, and I'd done the Forbidden Door show with AEW with Cassidy first. But in 23, it really opened up. So I just sensed an opportunity now. I was just like, it's time for me to fucking go for it now. Like, I'm just going to put my nut down and fucking go for it. I'm just going to wrestle everywhere, because after all the years of wrestling in Japan, I wanted the world. Like I wanted to see everything. I wanted to experience everything. And just, and it was hard because I once again entered my relationship where now I'm involved with being a parent, but just like, it was all worth like building towards something. So there was the match with Kenny first that really helped me out in Tokyo Dome. And then we done the rematch in Forbidden Door. And I feel like just before Forbidden Door, then Wembley was announced. And I was just like, I had everything crossed. I was like, because Tony doesn't owe me nothing, but it's in my back garden, bro.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? I wanted it so bad.
When did you and I meet? Because we've had a long history of...
Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, I don't remember.
So back in 2018, when you first came over for New Japan, you jumped Kenny.
Right, yeah.
And you kept in character backstage, of course, as the professional that you would. We didn't know you were coming out.
Right.
So we were backstage, like, and then you start slamming shit and throwing shit. And then, like, I didn't know what to do, so I just froze. So I stood still wearing my jacket while, like, Rocky and Okada, like, ran backstage. I just stood there, like, but I don't know if you, like, have I told you this or not? I feel like I might have. But like, as you were kicking off and screaming, yada, yada, you flipped a police officer's hat off. Like, you essentially, like, not assaulted a police officer, but like, put your hands on him, dude. And I was just like, oh, Jericho's going to prison. Like, that's the... And then afterwards, we obviously went for a karaoke, went for a meal. And essentially, I opened for Fozzy, my man. Like, I gave that little opening song for you.
I remember, it was in Fukuoka, I think, maybe.
Yes, sir.
I remember seeing you in the hallway and going, wow, he's bigger than I thought, because I'd seen so many of your matches and see how agile you were, but like you were as tall as I am, if not a little taller. I remember out of the corner of my eye going through this rant and beating up reporters and flipping stuff and seeing, oh, that's a monster. Wow, he's big. So I do remember that. But we had talked before, though, like you said, we had
little chats. Like DMs and stuff like that.
Yeah. And then we actually had a really great promo before Wembley where we discussed this, where I remember reading in the Observer, like, oh, Ospreay's going to kill himself. He's going to be like Dynamite Kid. I remember I called you to say,
Rocky passed over your number. We had a chat. And like, honestly, I appreciated that so much.
Yeah.
I have no idea how much, because I was sat in my room in my parents' house. You called me up and went, mind if I do we have a chat? And I was like, yeah, go for it. He went, listen, man, like, I just watched you take some DDT off the apron. You got
That's what it was, yeah.
He was like, dude, you got to stop doing that. Like, you got to, like, be calm about this. And, like, and I really did appreciate it because, like, even though, like, I'm in control of, like, what I'm doing, right? Like, I know. But, like, deep down, I was like, but you give a shit. Mm-hmm. You care so much to be like, you've got a long career. You can be bigger than this, but just got to like wind your neck in on these things.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've done anything that stupid. Like I've done like some elbow drops off a top ropes and some like moonsaults off a shit, but like nothing where it's like head first onto the floor, like onto the actual floor, right. Not a ring. Like
it's the tried and true passage. I remember Nick Bockwinkel told me that when I was 21 years old. Of like, you know, you do too much and then you're like, you think, oh, come on. And then you realize like, it's just everybody gets to a certain point in the business where you realize I am doing too much.
Yeah.
And it's good to figure that out. And it's good when people tell you, because then you think, oh, come on, but there must be something to it. This is Nick Bockwinkel talking to me. I'm 21. Obviously I want to do every move. But when, like you said, I'll never forget that he cared enough to say something. He saw something in me. And when I finally, a couple years later, realized what he was saying was right, I always appreciated that he said that, you know?
Yeah. And it goes a long way, man. Like, because, like, you don't owe me anything. Mm. Like, we've literally had one drink together in, like, Fukuoka.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, for you to actually just give us a call and take that time out just to be like, look after yourself. Like,
yeah.
It meant a lot to me. But, like, I feel like that was the perfect fuel for what we needed for Wembley. Like, because when it got announced for Wembley, a lot of people were like, huh? Why? Mm. What's the story? And everyone's impatient, man. Everyone's impatient. They don't want to play it out. But, like, I was dead proud of that, like, our little promo that we had. Because it was just kind of like, why am I facing you? It was like, dude, you're the biggest star here. It's Wembley Stadium. There isn't anything bigger in the UK. So,
right.
Like, for me, it was just kind of like, as, like, my contract is running out and I'm facing the biggest star in the biggest show that's ever happened, why wouldn't I want to win this match? This is going to set me up for life.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, for you to come back and just be like, no, this is my chance to prove to everyone. This is the biggest moment of my life. Like, and I feel like, me personally, I think a lot of people's expectations were low and we f***ing knocked it out. For me, we stole the f***ing show.
Well, and you know what's funny about that, too? Like, and once again, people have opinions and this and another thing, but like, dude, there's no way that we weren't gonna kill it. I mean, we've had some pretty good track record of having great matches on big shows. I was like, dude, these guys have no idea what we're gonna do. Yeah. You know
and
what I mean?
And it's the same old thing. Is that there's always gonna be like people that hate me. There's always gonna be people that hate you. But the reality is, bell to bell, like we delivered,
and
we delivered better than like what a lot of people could have in that situation.
We had a great match,
but man, like what an experience! Like it's Wembley, bruv. Like. Yeah. I honestly, it's not the arena. It's the stadium, man. Like, not many people have done that. The elite of the elite have performed in Wembley Stadium.
Wasn't that, the match was your idea too, wasn't it? Didn't you?
I contacted you.
Yeah.
And I said, like, I'd not owed anything, but like, we was meant to do it in a Tokyo Dome. I want to do it here.
Yeah.
Like, if the opportunity is here, I'd love nothing more to wrestle my f***ing hero, man.
No,
it's Brett Bulldog. It's Canada versus England. It's home turf, man. And then, obviously, like you said, you pitched it to Tony. We didn't hear nothing for a while. And then I think it was just before Forbidden Door. It was like, yeah, it was going to be me.
Yeah. Because what got him, because, you know, he's such a fan, was the Brett Bulldog comparison. He loved that idea.
Yeah. And, like, for a way to be like, okay, like, I'm not with this company. That's a hell of a lot of trust for Tony to give to me.
Yeah.
And, like, normally in that situation, like, he'd obviously want to put his home guy over the guy that signed with AEW.
Yeah.
But like the home, he trusted me into not only going over to like give the people what they want. And you obviously graciously allowed me to have that moment for us. But it was just kind of like, he really like made me feel like a part of the team,
mm-hmm.
like with the fireworks, didn't need to do that. The song, the like the added time for the entrance, he allowed me so much time. And like honestly, man, being in that situation, like we was at RevPro the night before, and we played, like, and you contacted me about you doing that indie, right? He was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna pop over, like I'm gonna jump you," and you waited out, got you out away from all the locker room.
Yeah.
He came and jumped me. And we like, and I feel like that added to it, man, because everyone started talking about you coming over to RevPro.
The buzz was there,
The buzz was super there. And
wearing my Bushi mask.
Yeah, classic as well. Like, as soon as that Bushi mask comes on, everyone thinks it's you.
No, what I really liked about that too, obviously the match was amazing, but I love that because you were in Japan and we had to wait until basically the week
before. It
was
before,
the G1. The G1, right. And I remember that promo. I was so happy with it because I was like, you really proved that you can talk too. And you know, you had such intensity because you're talking about your missus and your son, and you know, this is everything to me and providing for them. And it really, there was some great vulnerability as I know you were a heelish guy, but it was a real babyface promo, and that's okay. It really showed some depth, which I really liked.
Feel like, but that's the thing in this story in particular, it wasn't like, it didn't need to be a de facto bad guy and a de facto good guy. I think we could have both, like, you're the legend that everybody wanted to see, and to sing Fozzy and to sing Judas. Like, there was that, but there's also this, like, Essex boy, that like that is scraping everything as he got, and like this is like you're the wall, and like that's if everyone wanted to do it. And for me, man, like gotta see, like there was 4,000 people in the RevPro show, right? That's 5% of the audience, and that was a big audience.
It
like,
was huge,
4,000.
Yeah.
Like Copper that's box, like yeah. Sometimes that's not an indie, man. Like right. Like sometimes like we don't even pull forward. Like, do you know
more
what I mean?
People, yeah, there than there probably will be tonight.
Yeah. So like for me, that was big. 5%, bruv. So then, like, going out, like, just thinking to myself, like, no one is going to know who I am. Or, like, a smattering. It's only going to be that 5%. And I went out there, people were singing my song.
Yeah.
And, mate, just looking around, and the moment that bell rang, I just looked at you, and then I looked around. People were singing.
Mm-hmm.
People were singing my name, bruv. It's just, it's unreal. It's like, so, like, for you and for Tony, like, it's the biggest thank you, man. It's, like, a genuine, like, you changed my life, all of you guys. Like, you generally, like, have put something where you didn't have to give me that at all. It could have gone to another Brit, but you gave me the opportunity to shine. And to, and not only that, you gave me, like, a lot of offense as well. Like, you allowed me to hit the Sky Twister, which I apologize for. Like,
I caught you.
Yeah, you could have did as well, bruv. Caught every bit of me. And, but, like, allow me to have like such a good offense and such a good flurry, and to like really like proper put a flag in the ground to be like, right, this is me now. Like, you have, and coming back and sitting down with the Wembley logo back there, having Kyle backstage. Honestly, I felt like Iron Man at the end of Endgame.
Yeah.
It's like, you can rest now. And I was just like, oh, it was because that whole 2023, man, like I was on a run.
Yeah, you
and
were.
And that was like, after I got there, I was like, me, man, that was it. Like, that
but you're in the zone right now, where, like we mentioned at the beginning of this, you know, as we start to wind down, where you are, you know exactly what you're doing in the ring with each opponent that you have, where every match is very special. You've got the confidence now, which is something you really need to be a top guy. You have to have the confidence. Mm. You've got it.
Yeah, I just it's about being just my charming little self, isn't it? I just got to try my best to not swear, but like I'm doing my best just to like have that confidence and have that trust in myself now that I can hang with you, that I can hang with Kenny and Takeshita and all the, and Daniel Cern and all these guys, man. Like I'm ready for the responsibility. I think years ago, even when I called you back in 2021, I think I was still going through a little bit of a mental breakdown, dude. Like I was still finding out who I am. Like now I know who I am, and I'm aware of what the responsibilities are. There are going to be some roadblocks that I'm going to walk into, like coming in here now, man. Like now being full time here, there are going to be roadblocks. There are going to be times where like, I don't understand why this promo works, but I've got to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'll come to you for advice. I'll come to Danielson for advice. I'll come to all these guys for advice because this is still new to me. Like we're going to be going on this journey together. And like, I generally hope my teammates all help me out and boost me up because like, this is now like I want to be. I feel like there's now like a little bit of a culture shift now going on in AEW now. Like, because a lot of things like I've heard about, like now this is kind of like, I feel like we're all coming together more as a team now.
Yeah.
This is now like a real team atmosphere back here. Like, and I'm, whatever is needed from me, I'm willing to, like, if you give me the ball, I'm willing to put it in the back of the net, man. So, like,
it's interesting too, because you're going to go through the tried and true passage of being on live TV now, which is a whole different trip.
I think I'm main event tonight.
Yeah. So, but that's the thing. You'll have 5 minutes, 3 minute break and 6 minutes. You know, I remember my first time I worked with Jerry Lynn on live TV. It's like, you got 7 minutes. And I was like, I just come from Japan, like 7 minutes. Like I barely even lock up in 7 minutes. I'm used to doing 30 minutes, 40 minutes. You got seven. What am I going to do in 7 minutes to get over? But you know, that's kind of the world that's we live in now. Yeah. You know,
it's the art of getting like minimalizing, but maximizing the minutes that you do have.
That's right. That's right. And showing. Are you excited tonight? It's your very first. I mean, once again, like we said, you've worked on AEW television, you've worked the pay-per-views, but this is different now.
No,
you got this huge buzz from the Takeshita match. This is basically your first Dynamite tonight.
Yeah, exactly. This is my first one. It is a part of now being like, okay, we've heard all the talk. Mm-hmm. What you got? Can you walk the walk? And like, this is going to be the test now. Like, and you know what the worst thing is I believe I can walk the walk, but mm-hmm. there's still things that I'm not aware of. Like, Orange Cassidy walked past me and was just like, beware of the main events because they sometimes cut you on time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, like, don't plan as much. Don't plan for 8 minutes, plan six yeah. instead. So I was kind of like, okay, I understand it a little bit more. But like, once again, this is all going to be new to me. I'll happily say it now. I'm going to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to make a bunch of them. And it's up to you fans. If you guys want to say you f***ed up, like, I applaud you for saying you f***ed up. You're more than welcome to. Like, I am nothing more than a walking f*** up. But the f*** ups are the things that make us human, man.
Right.
Like, so that's the thing. I'm willing to go on this journey and I'm willing to show people my vulnerability in this. And like, this is now the biggest test of my life now. Can I hang mm-hmm. on national TV week after week after week? And honestly, right now, I think I can.
It was great. I told Flair about you because, you know, Rick doesn't watch a lot of wrestling, and why should he? After the match, he was like, you aren't kidding. The Ospreay's the real deal. He's next level. And everybody, what did he say?
Mate, he came backstage because my ass was killing me, dude. And I came back and I planted myself down on the bed and I was crying. And then he went, Mr. Ospreay, and he took my hand and looked up, and it was Rick, and I stood up again. And I was like, yes, sir. And he was like, you are everything I've heard of and more. Yeah. You're the best guy here right now. And I was like, from you, man.
That's cool.
And he went, you weren't kidding about this. And I saw your little face smiling, and it was just like, oh, you too.
And the crowd too. Like, here we are in Greensboro, North Carolina. You know, not exactly a hardcore wrestling mecca, but everybody was going nuts for you and standing ovations and
they
cheering
and yelling.
They were
singing the song as well, man. I mean, that's huge, right? Ospreay. Yeah. I was just like, mate, this is amazing.
I mean, I think people are ready to embrace you at this point.
I'm ready, man. Like, I'm ready for that connection. I'm ready just for the opportunity. So, like, I'm just grateful for everything. I'm thankful to yourself, to Tony, to the entire roster, for everyone that's made All Elite Wrestling possible, because we now have a genuine alternative to the leaders. And all we've just got to do is focus on being us, and that's the best that we can do.
Who are you looking forward to working here?
I mean, I want round two. That's I definitely want round two.
Yeah,
my dream match is Danielson. Oh, like, I really want to do
you've
that.
Never worked
like,
with them?
Never.
Oh my gosh.
So like, I want it to be just a day where there's a part of me that's just like, don't announce it. Just literally just one of these days. It's like, boom. And just have it standing in the ring. Obviously now announce it or sell tickets. But like,
and obviously when Kenny's back,
Kenny's back, you've got to do round three as well. It's one all now. Unless if you count that PWG match from 2015, don't count it. Yeah. But like, there's a bunch of guys I feel like there's going to be rocking out through the door. And I want to work with everyone. Strickland as well. He's mm-hmm. one of the main guys. Like, we grew up together. He's been around my mum's ass so many times. Like, do you know what I mean? So
I didn't know that.
No, it's so lovely that he's like become what he is as well, man. Like, singing, he's like got his own podcast as well. And like the star that he's become. Like, one guy that I've been in a tag match with, never one-on-one, Hangman Page, never mm-hmm. been in a ring with him. Edge is here. Adam Copeland. Yeah. I want to wrestle with him. I'd love to do that as well. Like, so many lads here, man. And like, I'm willing to do anything. I'm willing to work with everyone. I want to bring everybody together. This is now for me. Like, I want to show that teammate atmosphere.
Last question. You mentioned the Shingo match. What is your favorite match? Is there another one that pops in your head besides the Shingo one? You've had so many great ones.
Yeah, I've had flipping loads out already. Do you know what? I really liked my mom with Michael Oku. I really love that one.
Just a few weeks ago.
Just the one that a few weeks ago. Yeah. Like, I honestly think that was such like a really, if you know like the trilogy, of course, like if you watch it in just itself, I'm sure it's a good match. But if you know the fine details that we put in, like, I really worked hard on trying to put in those fine details. And Michael and Amira, bless them, like as an act, like at first I didn't think it was going to work every single time, but like they've really showcased that. It's like a modern-day Macho Man and Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's what I love about it. And I really do hope that there is an opportunity over here for him down the line, because I believe Tony was really impressed. I think the best thing for him was obviously the experience of still traveling the world and doing that. So I don't see why like a Ring of Honor couldn't be like here. There are some guys here that like are incredible, but like he has worked hard enough to deserve a spot.
He needs to go to Japan. He's working in Mexico.
I believe so.
But,
I mean,
he's another guy they could use there now that you're gone and Jay's gone. I think he could really rise to the occasion.
So. Yeah.
Well, man, it's great talking to you. It's great having you here, and I'm excited to see what you're going to do, man.
Always, mate. Always a pleasure.
All right, bruv.
Bless you, bruv.
Let's go to work.